From the studios of Wavefront Audio Visual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is a Little Brother Extra. Little Brother is the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and tonight I am angry. This is an extra episode number 133A of Little Brother for the 19th of August, 2023. Stay tuned, you'll find out why I'm angry in just a minute. But before I go there, I need to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants. That would be me, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Normally, I would offer an opportunity for a rebuttal, but if you disagree with me tonight, you stand with fascists, and you will have to find your own damn platform. If you'd like to join the conversation, however, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Right, let's get started. All right, so you're all probably wondering why I decided to break hiatus. Tonight, I have a story for you that ticks all of the boxes. High technology? Yeah, maybe not as high as most of the stories I run, but yes. Low intelligence? Oh yeah. Crime, greed, corruption? Yes, yes, and yes. Right. Here we go. In 1990, the Secret Service staged a raid on Steve Jackson Games, a small publisher of role-playing games. What led up to such a thing? Well, there's a lot of moving pieces here, so follow the blinking cursor carefully. A couple of years prior, a hacker had gotten into a computer system operated by Bell South, a company that was spun off of AT&T and has since returned to being part of the telecom giant. In an act of unfettered braggadocio, the hacker had collected a handful of documents, one of which he had uploaded to a bulletin board system as a way to prove his claim to have hacked Bell South. It was a mostly inconsequential document about the emergency 911 system. It wasn't even interesting. I've read it, and honestly, the tax code is far more fascinating. But it was proof of a claim, so it got uploaded to bulletin board systems all over the place. On top of that, the human tendency exists to want what you have been told that you cannot have, and that kicked in. And other bulletin board system users started to copy it from board to board. One of the boards that it landed on was called Illuminati. It was run by Steve Jackson Games as a place where players could discuss the company's games, share files, but also discuss whatever else they wanted to. The fact that a user outside of the company had put this file on the system, that triggered the raid. The raid happened around the time that the company was getting ready to go to press with a new game. The new game was a cyberpunk-themed game. It was called GURPS Cyberpunk. And the agents conducting the raid were unfamiliar with the world of role-playing games, and especially the tendency of the printed materials that go with role-playing games to sometimes seem somewhat realistic as a way to help the players get their head into the game, help them with their suspension of disbelief, letting them get that much more into the game. The agents? Oh, they thought they'd hit the mother load. They thought they had just found Hacker Central. Everything electronic belonging to the publishing house was collected and removed as evidence, leaving them with nothing. Everything that they were going to publish in the next week, if I recall correctly, was on the computers that walked out of that house as evidence. Don't believe me? Let me share with you an excerpt from Bruce Sterling's most excellent book, The Hacker Crackdown. He wrote, quote, "The day after the raid, Steve Jackson visited the local Secret Service headquarters with a lawyer in tow. And there he confronted Tim Foley and demanded his book back, but there was trouble. GURPS Cyberpunk alleged a Secret Service agent to astonished businessman Steve Jackson was, quote, a manual for computer crime." "It's science fiction," Jackson said. "No, no, no, this is real." This statement was repeated several times by several agents. Jackson's ominously accurate game had passed from pure, obscure, small-scale fantasy into the impure, highly publicized, large-scale fantasy of the hacker crackdown. No mention was made of the real reason for the search. According to the search warrant, the raiders had expected to find the E911 document, that's the one I was referring to a moment ago, stored on Jackson's bulletin board system, but that warrant was sealed, a procedure that most law enforcement agencies will only use when lives are demonstrably in danger. The raiders' true motives were not disclosed until the Jackson search warrant was unsealed by his lawyers many months later. The Secret Service and the Chicago Computer Fraud and Abuse Task Force said absolutely nothing to Steve Jackson about any threat to the police 911 system. Jackson was left to believe that his computers had been seized because he intended to publish a science fiction book that law enforcement considered too dangerous to see print, end quote. By the way, The Hacker Crackdown is publicly available online for free with Bruce Sterling's blessing. If you've never read it, you really should. Anyway, long story short, the Secret Service ended up with tons of egg on their faces. Over the course of the next few years, the badly battered Steve Jackson Games was vindicated when they sued the Secret Service for loss of revenue, and some of the company's employees also sued for invasion of privacy. They won the case in 1993, with the judge admonishing the Secret Service for sloppy warrant preparation, suggesting that they needed better education on the relevant statutes. Keep that in mind as this story unfolds. So, why am I talking about a case from 30 years ago? Great question. I am so glad you asked. Well, it seems like someone tried that in a small town. Let's talk about what just happened last week. Our story brings us to a small town in Kansas called Marion, population 1,992. In this small town, we find, as one sometimes does in small towns, a weekly newspaper, published every Wednesday, which makes an earnest effort at covering the local news, local politics, and other goings-on that don't typically get covered by the larger papers or broadcast media. I understand these small-town papers because I grew up in a small town. Ours was called the News Herald. This one was called the Marion County Record. Now, regardless of how you feel about small-town life, these papers are important, and many of them take their work really seriously. So, one day in this small town, at a diner called Carrie's Kitchen, U.S. Representative Jake LaTurner, a Republican of Kansas, was present at an event to meet the public. As one expects at such events, he invited the press. Two reporters from the Marion County Record attended. The owner of the diner, however, decided that she did not want the press there. I mean, like, at all. She is alleged to have told the two reporters from the Record, quote, "I will not have members of the media in my establishment. You have to leave," end quote. Emphasis is mine. I wasn't there to witness it. I'm just reenacting this alleged statement from Kerry Newell, owner of Kerry's Kitchen. Well, I mean, it's her establishment, right? her rules. Press is not a protected class, at least not in this way, so it seems like she had the reporters trespassed from the establishment and asked Police Chief Gideon Cody to show them the door, and it appears that he did that. According to a report of the event in the Record, the reporters were later approached by one of the congressman's staffers, who apologized for the situation, explaining that he didn't realize that the owner was going to do that. They were offered an opportunity to meet with the congressman later, an offer that he allegedly made good on, and one would think that would be the end of the story, right? Right? Yeah, well, it wasn't. Now, unrelated to all of this, the owner of the diner was in the process of trying to get a liquor license. There's one little problem with this. Apparently, getting a liquor license in the state of Kansas, and I assume most, if not all, other states, requires you not to have a DWI on your record, which she allegedly does. An anonymous tip brought this to the newspaper's attention, and they looked into it. They determined that it was true, and then they decided they had more important things to report on. One might think that that would be the end of the story. There's only one thing. This is a small town. And if there is one thing about small towns, they are full of bored people, which means there is plenty of time to hold a grudge. No, the story about Miss Newell's DWI would never, ever have seen the light of day if only she had just let it go. I'll come back to that in a second. Now, we've established at this point that Carrie Newell appears to have a very dim view of the press. It's not really very clear how this happened, but apparently somebody tipped off the authorities about her DWI, and it seems like it surfaced when she went before the board to get her liquor license. Oh, did I mention corruption? Good, because here it is. Apparently she got her liquor license anyway. Now, I'm not aware of any solid trail that ties this back to the newspaper, but somehow Miss Newell became aware that the newspaper knew about her DWI, and so, whether true or not, she seems to have drawn the conclusion that they must have been the ones behind this information coming before the board. I don't personally know that this is the case. It does appear like she's pretty well connected. She went crying to the police department about her privacy being invaded, and somehow it got wheels turning that shouldn't ever turn in a free society. Somehow, a search warrant was issued for the newspaper. The police raided the newspaper offices in much the same way that the Secret Service had raided Steve Jackson Games 30 years ago, taking everything electronic out of the building. They also took the personal electronic devices of several reporters, actually resulting in an injury to one reporter as they snatched her personal phone right out of her hand. They raided the home of the newspaper owners, Eric Meyer and his mother, Joan. They took everything. Computers, phones, they even took the internet router, leaving the household incommunicado. Now, we're already in pretty ugly territory here, but it got uglier because Joan Meyer was 98 years old. You'll notice I used the past tense, was. Why do I speak of her in the past tense? Simple. She died from the stress of having her house raided by the Gestapo. Congratulations, fuckers. You killed a 98-year-old woman. Good job, assholes. Well, I'll get into my opinions on all this in a minute. I have just a couple of more facts to lay out first. First, under federal law, the way to get information out of a newspaper is a subpoena. Search warrants are not completely out of the question, but they need to be kept to the specific individuals who are believed to have committed a crime, and only when they are people that actually work at the paper who are believed to have committed the crime. The likelihood of a publication house being a racket is so low that there is little case to be made for raiding the whole fucking business. The First Amendment implications are pretty obvious to me, but let me lay them out. The First Amendment enshrines the freedom of the press, amongst other things, essentially identifying the press as a vital service to society. Now, you might be able to wiggle out of that argument, though, so let's try another one. If we examine the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, this is pretty clear, because it says, quote, "No warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation," and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized, end quote. It seems as though the need to particularly describe the things to be seized wasn't there. Oh, but there's this other thing too. It also seems as though the oath or affirmation was also not present. Yep, that's right. The judge is Carrie's buddy. Because she went ahead and issued a warrant without getting the affidavit that is required by law attesting to the reason that the search is to take place. Now, I haven't mentioned it up to this point, but the Kansas Bureau of Investigation got involved in this mess. Just a bit of background on that idea. Most states have got some sort of parallel to the FBI, just, you know, something that operates at the state level. The KBI? That's Kansas' version of it. It took me this far into the story to talk about them because the initial statements from them were, let's just say, not impressive. However, in retrospect, it seems as though they were just holding their cards close. So what happened is they've taken over the investigation started by the Marion police, and they have stated that they will continue it without review or examination of any of the evidence seized on August 11th. In other words, all the seized things are being returned because they're not valid evidence. That equipment has been out of the hands of the newspaper for long enough that, absent a heroic effort, they would have missed a publication date. The newspaper is sending the equipment off to be examined forensically to ensure that it has not been modified or altered in any way. Right. Let's take a quick breath, then we'll get into my opinions about all of this. Let's start by debunking a claim that Ms. Newell appears to have been making. When speaking to the press, she has repeatedly claimed that her privacy rights were violated when her DWI charges were surfaced. Specifically, she claims a violation of the Driver's Privacy Protection Act, which protects DMV records. There's only one problem with that. You don't need a DMV record here. You need a court record. And those? Those are public. All the paper would have to do upon receiving the tip is go hit up LexisNexis and find that record. Boom. Confirmed. They may have even done the research before they decided to spike the story, because it's really that little of an effort, and it's fully legal because it only involves public records. Honestly, this woman makes me think of the videos you find online of Karens telling you that you can't record them in public because it violates their HIPAA rights. In other words, she doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about. But the bigger concern? It's that raid. It took away from the newspaper all of the content that they were preparing for the upcoming edition. It really left them with only one choice as far as what story to lead with, and that would be the one that they now found themselves starring in. All the filthy details I just laid out for you? Yeah, entire edition about that. Now, it's completely plausible that the police department knew that this was not going to fly in the long run. It's possible the authorities thought that they were going to punish the paper for not complying with their wishes by simply raiding it and fouling their publication schedule. They have surely cost the paper a lot of money. But it doesn't matter at this point. The authorities in that town are gonna get their clocks cleaned in court. However, this is bigger than that. The freedom of the press is critical to the running of this country. This is a small town newspaper this time around, but who gets whacked next time? And they didn't even try to cover their tracks. The police in that town carried out an illegal raid on a media outlet, on a warrant that was overly broad, a warrant that was not issued according to procedure, not backed up by evidence or even a reasonable degree of probable cause, all because someone who was buddies with all the officials almost didn't get a liquor license that she still got and shouldn't have. Someone with a beef with the press. Someone who believed it when certain politicians claimed that the press is the enemy of the people. You know who else claimed that about the press? Joseph Stalin and Mao Zedong. Nice fucking company you guys are keeping. This town is run by fucking fascists. Marion, Kansas, clean your shit up. You have absolutely no right to call yourselves Americans. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. Our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. As advertised before, episode 134 will drop on the 9th of September. Stay safe and be well.